Today we're unpacking seven men broke a marathon record on the same Sunday from the Training Signals blog. And yes, the title sounds almost impossible.
Seven men, one race, all faster than the old course record. That is not your standard Sunday morning.
Not remotely. At the Sydney Marathon, Adisu Gobena won in 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 42 seconds, setting a new course record and improving his personal best by more than 2 minutes.
Which would normally be the entire story. New record, huge personal best, done.
Except six other men also beat the old course record. Seven athletes went faster than anyone previously had on that course.
And the reigning world champion, Alphonse Simbu, ran 2:04:57 and finished fourth.
Fourth. See, that's the part. A time that breaks the old record doesn't even put you on the podium.
So, the Post's argument is that we're not looking at seven totally separate miracles. Something about that specific race made fast times available to everyone prepared to take advantage.
Exactly. Then the women's race provides a revealing contrast. Perez Jepchircher won in 2 hours, 18 minutes, and 31 seconds, just 9 seconds outside the course record set the year before.
Same day, same weather, same city. But she had a much smaller field and far less company at the front.
Which gets us to the central idea. A marathon time is not a pure fitness reading. It's fitness meeting a specific course, field, weather pattern, pacing situation, and taper on a particular day.
And all of that gets compressed into one finishing time. The number doesn't label which part came from fitness and which part came from circumstance.
Right. The Post then asks a wonderfully uncomfortable question. If you ran the best race of your life next weekend, would you actually know why?
My immediate answer would be, because I'm amazing now.
Oh, come on. And that reaction is exactly the trap.
Because maybe I am fitter. Or maybe it was a cool morning, a favorable stretch of course, a pace group carrying me through my usual fade, or a taper that finally landed correctly.
Most people don't investigate that split because the number feels like the explanation. A personal best seems self-interpreting.
But the Post says that treating every fast day as proof of an entirely new fitness level can send training decisions sideways.
You assume every second of improvement is permanent, then stack more training load on top. But some portion of that performance may have come from conditions that won't repeat.
So, this isn't trying to take away the personal best. It's asking whether the story we attach to it is bigger than the evidence.
Perfectly put. And the Sydney field shows how much race context can matter.
A deep competitive field changes the experience before we even talk about weather.
Running with six other people capable of breaking the course record means nobody has to lead alone into a headwind. Nobody has to keep guessing at pace without company.
And psychologically, keep going feels more believable when the whole group around you is still going.
The Post calls that a higher psychological floor. The people beside you are providing evidence, in real time, that the pace can continue.
But none of that appears in a training log. It exists only on race day, and only when the field happens to be that deep.
Then conditions add another layer. A few degrees of temperature, a favorable wind, or a course profile that trends slightly met downhill can all become part of a fast result.
Those aren't fitness adaptations, but they still affect the number everyone sees at the finish.
That's why the coaching guidance behind pacing at Training Signals treats weather and course conditions as real inputs, not footnotes. When those factors matter, pacing expectations are adjusted rather than forced to match one flat number.
Because the flat number was never the honest target in every possible saying.
Exactly. Then there's the factor those seven men deliberately controlled. They arrived rested.
Wait, because rested can sound like they simply stopped doing things.
And the Post is specific that a taper is not passive rest. It's a deliberate reduction in volume that preserves sharpness while accumulated fatigue clears.
When it lands correctly, the fitness you already had can finally show up.
And the Post argues that a good taper can be worth more on the clock than many athletes expect from one extra hard week.
But miss it by cutting too little or resting too much, and the same underlying fitness can produce a worse day.
That's such an important distinction. Sometimes the breakthrough isn't brand new capacity. Sometimes it's unusually clean access to capacity that was already there.
Okay, but most listeners are not about to run a sub-205 marathon.
Thankfully, the post brings this straight into ordinary training. Maybe it's a group ride where you suddenly stay with the fast pack the whole way.
Or a tempo run that comes out about 30 seconds per mile faster than anything similar from the previous 2 months.
Or a century where you feel stronger at mile 90 than you usually feel at mile 40.
Those feel like breakthroughs because they genuinely are fast, strong performances. The temptation is to declare, "This is my normal now."
Sometimes that declaration is right, but often the result is a mixture. Real fitness plus cooler weather, a helpful group, a taper week you accidentally timed well, or the adrenaline of racing someone instead of training alone.
And the honest question isn't, was this real? It was real. The question is, how much of this represents a lasting change?
Yes. One data point cannot answer that by itself. You need to place it against a trend.
Which is where the post connects the race story to how the Training Signals app handles performance data.
Personal bests are reported across four rolling windows: all time, the last 12 months, the last 6 months, in the last 3 months.
So, a strong recent month can appear as a strong recent month, instead of vanishing beneath a career best from 2 years ago.
And that old career best doesn't get quietly redefined as your current weekly fitness either.
That's a subtle point. The record remains meaningful without pretending it describes you perfectly today.
The app's effort score also names the input behind each session, whether it came from a head unit's own number, power measured against functional threshold power, heart rate, or simply duration.
So if a session suddenly reads as unusually hard, you can inspect where that judgment came from instead of taking it on faith.
And the fitness, fatigue, and form view is deliberately a trend. It's meant to be read across weeks, not judged from one isolated day.
None of that can tell us exactly how Gobina's 148 seconds of improvement should be divided.
Right. Nobody can say precisely how many seconds came from greater fitness, how many from the deep field, and how many from favorable conditions. Not even Gobina can split it cleanly.
The value of context is not perfect accounting. It's preventing one giant assumption.
The harmful assumption is, every bit of this great day is my new baseline. Then the next training block gets built on a number that hasn't been fully earned as a repeatable level.
But the post also cuts the other way. It is not telling us to shrug at every success and say, probably the weather.
Absolutely not. A fast race is real information, and ignoring it out of excessive caution is the mirror image of overtrusting it.
If you performed well, some genuine fitness produced that performance. It deserves to influence what comes next.
The key word is proportion. Let one great day update your understanding of your fitness a little, not entirely.
Then, let the next few weeks of ordinary training confirm it, refine it, or correct it before one number becomes the foundation for a whole new plan.
And I appreciate that the post admits the limit here. There is no clean formula that separates fitness from conditions inside a single result.
Anyone claiming an exact split is guessing with more confidence than the data supports.
What you do have is context, how the result compares with your recent trend, whether conditions were unusual, and whether your taper clearly landed well or benefited from lucky timing.
That makes the interpretation a judgment call, not an equation.
But it's a judgment worth making deliberately. Otherwise, the excitement of the fast number makes the judgment for you.
So back to Sydney. Seven men ran the best marathon times of their lives on one particular Sunday. That's not seven unrelated coincidences.
It's a dramatic example of every result being a blend. Who you were at the starting line, and where you happened to be standing when the gun went off.
And the long view matters. The post's closing thought is that athletes who improve for a decade are usually the ones who learn to tell those pieces apart.
Celebrate the fast day. Count it as evidence. Just don't force one sparkling result to to carry more certainty than it can support.
This discussion reflects the post's opinion and personal experience. It is not medical advice or individualized coaching.
You can read the full post, Seven Men Broke a Marathon Record on the Same Sunday, at trainingsignals.cc/blog.